Growing up, I never knew of the lengths people went to strip my grandmother of her culture. It was something we never really talked about. The most I learned about what happened to my grandmother was in elementary school, when she would come to my class to teach everyone about Indian boarding schools. Even then, she seemed to focus mostly on the culture of Native Americans, sharing with my classmates our delicious fried bread and showcasing jewelry she had made, with lots of turquoise and coral included. My grandmother admitted going to her school was hard, and it was different. But she only told me so much about her trauma, through bits and pieces sprinkled throughout my life. I decided to finally sit down and have a conversation with her about her years at Intermountain Indian School, the biggest Indian boarding school to ever exist in the U.S. She shares her story.
My Native American Navajo name is Yellowhair, Anita Yellowhair, and I am 83 years old. I forget, it might be 82 or 84. I'm from Earth, brought here. And my home, I call it my home, is Steamboat on the Reservation. I've been away from my family and from home since 1949. I went to an Indian school, a public school. Indian school is government school that the white people dragged us to learn because we were kind of stupid. So we weren't learning anything, herding sheep and very, very poor family. I was very young. I didn't understand the language, so somebody had to interpret for us. So the interpreter come with the interview with the government. And I didn't know how to dress the white man's way, and I didn't have any clothing. So I carried one dress all the way to Utah, Salt Lake City, up to Brigham City, Utah. They took us in, they put us in school in the military building that they had for training. There were like about 450 people that can stay in the top floor and the bottom floor. We were taught to live in a condition like that, and we were not used to sheets or anything. We're not used to running water. We don't know how to use a toilet. That was the most embarrassing thing, though, to change to new life. So I was 8 or 9, less than 10 years old. We have to raise lamb and sheep that are out in the desert. Even at 8 and 9 years old, we would herd the little sheep, and that's our food. So, but it was. We called it very hard, but we didn't know it was hard. And we're used to it the way that life is. So, we don't say it's hard or anything. We just deal with it. We don't have any warm clothes or nothing. In the wintertime, it was really, really hard. So I feel sorry for animals when they're out there cold. But I at least I liked the life because I had nothing else to compare it to. I was happy being there, yes, but when they were changing, they came, my mother approved to have me sent away to learn because the white man pointed to his chest. He said, "You want to be like me?" He asked me if I want to be like him. And my grandmother, my grandfather, my father, and my mother were sitting across the room. We call a home. This is Hogan. It's made out of wood, round. I was happy the way life was, but then they said, this is not good life. You shouldn't, I guess they told my mother and father and grandparents that it was hard for me to, I have to change my life to something else. I started crying in the middle of it. Where am I going, you know? They tried to explain to me, but somewhere I stopped crying. I couldn't answer the question, "Are you happy?" But I guess I wasn't happy. Maybe I didn't look happy, but I seemed happy. I had my dogs and my sheep around me, and they give me comfort and joy and happiness. But they didn't understand it. I didn't have any of the right clothes, nothing, school clothes. I didn't have any new things. It was embarrassing. I was embarrassed because everybody had real pretty clothes and suitcases they put their stuff in. They even had money. We didn't live that way. And I only had a jacket and my, because we have to believe how we dress, we got to believe we cover our clothes all the way to our arm and have it fit all the way to our ankle. We don't show our skin when we dress. I only had one outfit. And she dressed me in that, and I'm waiting by the house with nothing else. I think I had maybe like a dollar or 50 cents or something like that. And I'm going away to school, which is like Utah. Brigham City, Utah. It's near to where the school is. And it's a long way. We have to be taken overnight. You know, when children, we'll go party first, we go somewhere. You say that to them, but me, I didn't have any way of going to party because we didn't have toilets or anything. And so I got in the car on the back with a girl. I don't know her very well, so I don't talk to her. She doesn't talk to me. So we just sat back there and drove 8 miles to school. There were a whole bunch of people there, their children, the same age I am. They were all sent away like prisoners. And we all just don't know each other. We just, some of us are crying, and the parents left them already, and they're all crying. And I didn't know what I was crying about. I remember it. And then I remember I was very embarrassed, and I was very embarrassed. I had peed in my pants. I didn't have a pants on, just a skirt. And on the seat, I got it wet, and I tried to explain to the people, why didn't you do it? I guess that's what they're saying there. You're kind of yelling at me. You're stupid, maybe. I don't know what they were saying to me. But anyway, we all gathered and got in the car, got in the bus, a huge Greyhound bus had come that was going to take us. It was about this time of the day, like about 3 o'clock, and the sun was still up. And I remember they're saying we're going to be leaving in a few minutes, and we got seated. It was a huge, it was really weird to me to see something like that, a huge bus. We got loaded up and we sat by each other, and we never talked to each other because we don't know each other's parents. We only know their parents. So we were really sick, secret. Like, all of a sudden about 4 o'clock, the huge Greyhound bus, they started up, really loud noise. At that time, a lot of us started crying because it was scary. But the crying didn't make any good. There's some people who came along. They're sitting out there waving to us. And all of a sudden, the bus left. And some of us are just like really shocked. I don't want to go back. I'm going to start crying. I didn't know where I was going. It recently got dark, traveling all night. And some of us had to go potty. We didn't know where the potty was. They're boys too. We're all the same age. We traveled all night long. We traveled. But they didn't introduce the toilet to us until somebody was peed their parents 2 or 3 times, and then we got boiled, chewed out about it, and they yelled at us. They demonstrated how the toilet works and everything, and we were okay then, but we would travel, and we fell asleep, and then when I woke up, I looked out the window, and there were huge trees. Utah is a forest country, mountain. We were climbing the mountain, and we see the trees, and we were looking out the window. A whole bunch of us woke up each other and looking out the window. It was scary climbing the mountain, and we were in town. We had never been, we have never seen a town before. And we drove up to this place, and there were other buses, and there's other children from other places down the reservation. Now we're off the reservation, now we're in town or in the city. And I'd never seen a city before, but we didn't know. We hung on to each other, but by that time we got to know each other a little bit, talk to each other. It was our first night. It was a very, very unexplainable what it was. But we were at our school, and we parked in front of this place, and there were other buses that had already arrived and their kids. So that I would say there's 20 buildings with 80 students in it. That's how many children came, 80 times 20. But some were growing up, some of the kids were growing up, some of them were like 10, 12 years old, they were going to go to school there. And they were all out there, they knew what they were doing, we don't know, we were just new. And then I cried and everybody else cried and we were like abandoned somewhere, it felt like.
I want to ask some more questions.
Don't cry now. That's not nice crying with me, but you don't know what you're crying about. It was really scary. Change of life. Just think, when you're growing up with little, you were everywhere. You were free, free, free. I was not like that. I was not driven to prison, but I didn't know it was like that. But it probably was nice. I didn't think it was like that. Go ahead. I'm strong now.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I can prove to you how bad it was sent you somewhere where they don't understand the language. Know where the party chair is. They had tall tree. I've never seen such trees. The trees were so tall. Utah is a really, really forest country. And the trees were pointing up in the sky. I couldn't believe it. And we were all little. I look back and remember that's the way we were. All of us were small, and these trees were out. And the buildings that we're supposed to live in were two-story buildings. And that building was given to us by the government, by the military. They were military buildings. That's where the practice, where they had the base. That's what we lived in. It was a base. So we have to change our life. We were all given sheets, given pillowcase and towel. I never seen anything so white in my life as the sheets. Because we usually sleep in a sheepskin and they don't get washed. That's what I'm used to. And everybody, all of us were like that. We're used to our way of life. But we're taken out of there. Not really explained what, I'm sure they explained to us what we're doing. We all agreed it's going to be a beautiful time. You're going to learn how to live a different, show your mother and father and all the stuff they told us. We'll try to believe it, but we have to earn it. I graduated in 1960. I learned everything. I became a dental hygienist. They trained me in that. But I still don't accept anything the white man's way. If you don't learn how to speak English and talk to other people in English, you're punished. You have to wash the toilet all night or sit down the hall with your hand against the wall, with your knees on the floor. That's a torture. But we were strong. We were strong. We didn't complain. We thought that's the way of life. That was just to teach you something. So it took quite a while to learn how to like. When you're growing up, we took away your language. We don't want you to learn because to me, speaking the language and living the white man's way was not good because it takes away a lot. It took away from taking my sheep and having them breathe around me and eating the grass and smelling me and the dog sitting next to me but being speaking English made me happy because I learned their way and I'm going to go far. I'm going to learn as much as I can because it's good for me. But if meddling in your brain, you don't like it, but there's no way that you can get out of it once you sign up. I go back, as the years go by, I learn how to do it, teeth, and I learned how to clean teeth and just assist the dentist. Finally, I get to that point, I'm old now. What's the point? I still want to go back home. I never fully accepted white man's way, but I still want to learn. And I think to myself, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about my grandchildren losing their path on the way. The Napa way is going down. The elders are all going. But you know, in our clan right now, I'm the oldest. I didn't know until one day I was laying there thinking, gee, my sister, who can I ask questions to? There's some questions I needed answered. I'm laying there in bed and I said, oh my God, I can't ask anybody. Everybody's younger than me. I'm the only one left. You have nobody else that truly, truly in their heart love you. And I love you with all my heart, with all my strength. I love you, and sometimes I give my advice to you. Think about it. What I wanted to be really to be with, I never knew. I never knew what I was supposed to be. So I advise you, my daughter Noelle, your mother, a strong person, and for you. And for you, Sierra, I advise you, find your happiness, find your path right away, or else you're just going to wander in the desert like I have been. I'm at the end of my trail. I still have things to say, to do. Thank you for letting me talk about me and the bad things. I don't want to tell you all those things. The good life is to find yourself. Your mother is good.
Stay together, even though people go away from each other, but that's not our way. Stay your way. Stay with your parents. You're too beautiful. You have such a life that you don't even know how far you can go. I know. I'm like the boarding school that Peter tried to put into my head and my heart. I wouldn't accept it. But you accept this. Don't turn back. Don't turn around and look back. But you have a good life. I'm happy going on. But now I know where I am.
My grandmother has never fully accepted the white man's way, the way I have. I was never taught how to speak Navajo. And honestly, I was barely taught anything about our culture, out of the fear I wouldn't accept the white man's way. I never grew up on the reservation. I spent most of my life in the city, unlike others in my family. My impressionable years were filled with American culture. I'm also half Mexican. But I feel as if the brainwashing my grandmother went through translated to every part of my cultural identity, even generations later. Growing up, it always felt like I was never enough for either of my cultures. I wasn't Navajo enough, and I wasn't Mexican enough, but I also wasn't white. I had to come to terms with how whitewashed my family had become. While I can never change what happened to our family, what I can do is share our story. I don't know where I would be today if my grandmother was never stripped of her identity, but all I know now is that I want her story to be heard and to be acknowledged. We're one of thousands of Native American families who have gone through boarding school trauma, and the generational trauma lives on. Listen to our stories. Give us that respect. I'm Sierra Alvarez.